nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 37 of Nerd Pride Radio. 37, the number of plays written by William Shakespeare, probably. And, this is my favorite, 37 is the quote-unquote most random two-digit number. That is, it is the number most commonly given if you ask a person to pick a random number between 0 and 100. 37. That's awesome. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. This week, our new sponsor is the church's new Catholicism Wow campaign. Awesome. Welcome, guys. Let me point out that I am a Catholic, and it's not something that I bring up on the podcast in general because this isn't a place for discussion of religion and politics and that sort of stuff. This is more about me having nerdy fun. But I would like to point out, in the spirit of nerdy fun, that my particular parish in the Catholic Church, our Archbishop, George Lucas, how cool is that? So every week when they start sending out prayers for various people and praying for guidance for our church leaders, they always mention to keep a prayer out there for Archbishop George Lucas. I think that's the coolest. And there's all sorts of Star Wars jokes I want to make, but they're too obvious. I'll leave them to you guys. And as long as I'm bringing it up, I just noticed a couple weeks ago that the hymnals we have in church right now have a black Jesus on the cover. I mean, you know, not that I have any problem with a black Jesus. I'm just saying I think it's odd that the Catholic Church is issuing hymnals with a black Jesus on the cover. And nobody has said a word about it. Nobody seems to care. Weird, huh? Okay, but enough about that. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. Then the best stuff off that master list gets spewed out onto you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. Updates! You've heard me talk about exoplanets. You know I love my exoplanets. And so, on the website this week, someone pointed out to me that we have found an exoplanet around Alpha Centauri. How cool. The closest star to our system. Alpha, well, technically Proxima Centauri, but close a darn enough. 4.3 light years away from us, we've discovered an exoplanet that is not only the closest planet to us, but also the closest planet to Earth size that we've found so far. All right? Sucker's only like 1.13 times Earth mass. That's pretty darn Earth-like. That's pretty awesome. Now, the problem with it is it has a surface made of boiling magma. Yeah, deal with that. Yeah, because for a planet that small, it's got to be pretty close in for it to give enough, disturbance to the star, or to have us be lucky enough to catch it in transit. It's running in pretty close. The sucker is only 3.6 million miles away from its star, which gives it a whopping year of 75 hours. Yeah, 75-hour year. That's how long it takes. Holy crap. So therefore, surface running about 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit. Liquid hot magma. So we won't be landing there anytime soon, but it is pretty darn cool nonetheless. I mean, it's reachable. We can see the darn thing. It's right there. And of course, when I say reachable, I mean, you know, if we really set our minds to it, like, you know, a couple hundred years, 500 years, maybe. Yeah, we could do that, right? But enough about that. You know what we haven't done around here in a long time? A really long time? The Nerd Pride Turntable.
Jamboree handouts, two turntables and a microphone. Bottles and cans, or just clap your hands, or just clap your hands.
That's right. I'm just a wannabe music nerd talking about music that I like. And specifically, this time around, I want to talk about my dad's music. All right? Because, you know, I think of myself as relatively open-minded about music. I like to think of myself as hip and at least passably in tune with what goes on in the music scene today. I mean, I'm not huge into indie music, but I know enough of it, and I have the links, and I check stuff out, this kind of stuff. I mean, most of my stuff is more mainstream, but also quite a diversity. And I hate to be one of those people who says, oh, dude, I like every kind of music except country. Or, oh, dude, I like every kind of music except rap. Okay, I hate that statement in general. Because really, if you listen to country music or if you listen to rap music, you know what? There's good stuff in there too. I mean, I don't like most country, but there's a few country songs that I really, really like. I mean, there's a couple of country songs that'll make you cry. And not the obvious tearjerker ones, but ones that have some real passion and emotion behind them. Rap music, hip hop music, there's lots of that I really enjoy. Again, most of it, don't like, but there's a few in there that I find, because I have a thing for really clever rhythms and really clever rhymes and rhyme schemes, and so rap feeds right into that, obviously. So, you know, there's some of it. It's not my music of choice, but God, I could listen to Busta Rhymes do just about anything. That dude is awesome. And even, look, the newest stuff, my kids, listen to some indie pop stuff that it sounds a little bit bubblegum, but then I start listening closer to it and I realize that the lyrics are really clever and it maybe isn't something I normally would have turned on. But now that, you know, they play it often enough that some of it's getting drilled into my head, I can appreciate that. Or dubstep. Have you been listening to the dub? Holy crap. That most of it sounds like noise to me, but there's a few of them, again, like any genre of music. There's lots and lots of garbage out there, but there's a few gems in it. All right, but what I'm talking about is my dad's music, all right? At some point, is my brain going to calcify and I'm going to stop listening to new music? I mean, or when my brain does calcify, maybe it's happened already. That's the part that scares me. When my brain does calcify, am I going to lock into my one music that I love? And yeah, I'll think I'm open-minded and I'll think I appreciate other stuff, but really, you know, I just turn back to the same old every single day. Is that what I'm already doing? Oh, I don't know. It scares me because, all right, my dad specifically, I remember when I was a kid, my mom and dad had a bunch of albums. They collected music and they had a bunch of stuff that I remember listening to as a kid that I loved and stuff that I still appreciate too to this day because it's the music of my childhood. Crystal Gayle. Crystal Gayle, yeah, okay, she's cheesy country ballads, and yet I still appreciate Crystal Gayle because I was so immersed in it when I was a kid. Simon and Garfunkel. There's a whole list of these albums I remember over and over hearing on our turntable, back when we had a real turntable and not just a metaphorical one like I use now. And they had a variety of music, and sometimes they would listen to country, and sometimes they would listen to rock, and it was always something different. And now, my dad, last time I went to see him, last couple times I've been to see him, he has satellite radio in his car, and pretty much the only thing he listens to all the time is hair metal. Yeah, my 60-something-year-old dad, and the only thing he listens to is hair metal. Hair metal, which, by the way, was the music of my high school, all right? That was my high school years was when hair metal was big, and then when I got to college, hair metal started dying and grunge took over right around 1990, 1989, whatever it was. But I remember my dad borrowing my Poison album. All right, Poison, Look What the Cat Dragged In, which still, I love that album. I don't care I don't care how cheesy it is. I don't care that they ripped off a lot of the stuff in it. I don't care about any of that. I love that album. And I remember my dad borrowing it, and I remember him loving it. So, you know, my 40-something-year-old dad back then, just there was something about Poison that just tripped his trigger. I don't know what it brought back for him. I don't know what it keyed in him, but he loved Poison. And since then has expanded out to all the other hair metal bands, whether it's, you know, Crew or Cinderella or Winger or whatever it is, doesn't make any difference. My dad likes hair metal. And that is his music of choice all the time now. All right. And the part that scares me is, yeah, I'm about the age now that my dad was when he first listened to Poison. I'm worried about that. All right. My kids have introduced me to dubstep, for example. And I like some dubstep. That's really cool. That's interesting. 25 years from now, and am I going to be listening to nothing but the dubstep channel? Is it just some random factor that your brain just, like I say, calcifies right there? This is the spot where my tastes in music freeze. All right. I read an article recently that says actually your tastes in music freeze a lot sooner than that. That it's something, you know, in your adolescence, that there's a certain phase of childhood, adolescence, et cetera, where the stuff that you get there is the stuff that sets your musical taste for life. So that in the future, the stuff that turns you on later is the stuff that is reminiscent of that or brings back hints of that music. I don't know how true that is. Because again, if it is, I don't know what hair metal was doing for my dad that took him back to, you know, his days as an early teen with, I don't know what, Elvis, Beatles, what was there when my dad was a kid? The Stones. I don't know what he was into as a kid. I should ask him that sometime, what music he listened to when he was young. That'd be kind of cool. So anyway, I'm just kind of worried because right now I feel like I have a wide diversity in taste in music. And I'm just worried that one day the switch is going to turn and suddenly I'm done. That's it. Guess what? You only like swing dance music for the rest of your life. Go for it. Oh, God. Yeah. I don't know what to do. So anyway, I will keep you posted though. All right. The day my brain calcifies, I will make sure that you guys are the first ones to hear about it. Although I should point out that when it comes to music, do you know who the music connoisseur is in my family? My wife. My wife, and not that she has, some sophisticated, developed classical taste or anything like that, but she likes a lot of different stuff, same way I do. And she is a little bit different than I am in taste. So there's, you know, like any two people, there's most of the stuff that she likes, I like as well. But she has a few of them that, I could do without. A little too poppy, a little too sentimental, a little too whatever. And there's some of the harder stuff that I like that she's not into. But my wife makes a point every week of going through various online music charts and sites and picking out any song that's new, anything that hasn't shown up on a chart anywhere before, anything that hasn't shown up on this site anywhere before. If she's never heard of it, she immediately goes to YouTube and she pulls the song up. She watches the video for it. And if she likes it, she puts it on the little list. And so she's always got a list of like 20 songs going of new stuff that she's never heard before. But hey, that's interesting. And then she'll listen to them two or three times through. And usually about the third time, she can make a decision that, okay, this is something I want on my playlist. Or, you know what? I don't care if I ever hear it again. Really, it's all right. And so then, you know, she narrows those down. So the select few each week, each month, the select few that make the cut, all right, we go out to iTunes and we buy those. And because of that, now I don't know when you heard Gangnam Style for the first time in your area, but we live in a remote corner of Nebraska where, you know, if we didn't have the internet, we wouldn't know anything happened outside of our borders. But my wife knew of Gangnam Style before anyone else in town, before any of my son's friends, before anybody. So when Gangnam Style hit it big, all right, and now everybody in the world knows Gangnam Style and you're already sick of it, my kids already knew all the lyrics to it. This actually happened more than once that my kids' friends are like, oh, God, you've got to check this out. You've got to check this out. Oh, my God. And so, for example, Gangnam Style or Sail from AWOL Nation or something like that. And my sons will go, oh, yeah, we've got this one already. And he'll sing along with it, and he'll talk about how cool it is. And finally, he's got friends that are asking him, dude, how do you always have all the new music before we do? And he's like, well, I get it from my mom. I'm sorry. And so apparently they have the coolest mom ever. I married well. So what's up next?
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, it's just stuff I don't have a category for yet. But today, for something completely different, I want to talk about families, specifically family words. Maybe this should have been in the word of the day section, but I don't have a specific term. This is actually a lack of family / relationship style words. And I get that in modern America, in most English-speaking countries, well, I shouldn't say most because, well, India is an English-speaking country and they outnumber all the rest of us 2-1, but for English speakers. But in America, Great Britain, Australia, the major English-speaking countries that you think of outside of India, the problem is we don't put the same importance on extended family that other societies do, or that our society used to once upon a day. And so differentiating between different family members is not really a high priority for us. It's okay, apparently, to us that we just have one word for uncle. Okay? So, because when you talk about family relation, when you talk about blood relation, well, uncle could be a blood relative or not, and there's no way to tell from the word. I mean, is this your father's brother, your mother's brother? Is it someone who married one of your parents' siblings? Is it, yeah, there's no differentiation. Or, for example, cousin. All right, cousin is a nice, easy one. Cousin is any two people that share grandparents. There you go, your cousins if you have the same grandparents. Excellent. Well, and you're not siblings, obviously, if there's a closer relationship. Don't get technical on me, people. All right, second cousin? You share the same great-grandparents. Ooh, simple. Third cousins, you share the same great-great-grandparents. That's how second and third cousins work. But again, it doesn't differentiate, you know, whether it's on your mother's side, your father's side. When you talk about grandparent, you actually have to say, okay, it's my maternal grandmother, my paternal grandmother. We don't specify. And so even the ones that we do have, and this is where my pet peeve comes in. God, maybe it should have been a nerd rage. Maybe. No, I'm not that angry about it. I just recently got into an argument with my father-in-law about what constitutes second cousins, third cousins, versus what constitutes a cousin once removed or a second cousin once removed. Okay. I'll give you the right definition. And we won't worry about what his definition was because, well, he was wrong. But the correct definition is, I already gave you, cousins, you share grandparents. Second cousins, you share great-grandparents. Once removed means up or down a generation. So, for example, I got my cousin Rob Logic, all right? And his kids, technically, all right, they call me Uncle Mike, but I'm not really their uncle because Rob and I are cousins. So his kids are technically my cousins once removed, which means I am also their cousins once removed. So it's cousins, and then you go up or down a generation. All right, so that's the once removed. So technically, if Rob Logic's kids have kids in the next, you know, 20 years or whatever, they're not that old yet. But when his kids have kids, then those children, so Rob's grandchildren, will be my cousins twice removed. Complicated? All right. Yet nobody seems to get this. And in fact, I didn't know the meanings of any of these words until about 20 years ago when my wife first started working at the school she's at now. When she first started teaching there, the janitor who worked there, great, great guy. He's long since retired now. But the janitor who worked there, you know, as everyone's having conversations, oh, yeah, where are you from originally? Oh, hey, I've got family down that way. Oh, really? And they found out that the two of them were related. And just on a lark, they wanted to know, okay, but exactly what is our relationship? So we had to go out and look up all of these terms. We had to look up, how do you term a first cousin, second cousin, a once removed, whatever. And we wound up getting to find out that my wife's great-grandfather was the half-brother of the janitor's grandfather. Okay, so his grandfather and her great-grandfather were half-brothers. So what does that make you? Because so they had the same, those guys, half-brothers, they had the same father, different mothers. So what does that make the two of them? All right, well, they technically you go with, if you're sharing the same grandparents, then no, it was my wife's great-great, damn it, I screwed it up already. It was his great-grandfather and her great-great-grandfather. All right, so if you share the same great-grandparents, you are second cousins. All right, so that's the level that we were at. Was it since it's his great-grandfather, that makes them second cousins. But actually, since they were only half-brothers, it makes them half-second cousins. And then my wife is one generation down from that, so it made them half-second cousins once removed. Now, that is cool. And that phrase, half-second cousins once removed, every time I start thinking about family relationships and the words that we use for them, that's how I always come up with it. Now, do I think that there should be a simple word to describe that relationship? No, that's probably asking a little bit much. I think half-second cousins once removed is probably exactly the appropriate amount of syllables to describe people who are that distantly related. And also, I guess genetically, if you want to break it down, that would mean that they shared 1/128 of the same genes. So their genetic material had less than 1% similarity as far as family relationship goes. So anyway, I'm fascinated by family relationships. I'm fascinated by the terms that we use and how we describe them. I like being exact about those. And I kind of wish sometimes, again, I wish that we had some more exact language. I know other languages do, and I'm always fascinated when I read about them. But anyway, I don't have a point. I just wanted to ramble on about half-second cousins once removed. I just think that's cool. Uh-oh. Better get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage. Came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay, I guess that's why I couldn't do nerd rage for the other one. I already had a nerd rage. I forgot it was on my list. This is actually, this whole week is me going back through my master list and picking out stuff that is interesting, but I just, for some reason, keep putting it off. I just haven't gotten to it. I didn't want to develop it, or it wasn't quite fully formed in my head. It wasn't. And so that's my dad's music, half-second cousins once removed, now this nerd rage. This is all stuff that's been on my master list for a while, and I just couldn't figure out how to go about it. So I'm just going to do it right now. My nerd rage this week is movies are not turning to crap, people. Every single year, especially around Oscar time, or summer blockbuster time, or there's always people who have to lament how the state of modern entertainment has done nothing but go downhill forever. Okay? And I can't disagree more strongly. And I think we've seen some stronger movies recently. And so this kind of talk is a little bit muted. The idea that, you know, every year people have to list, okay, here's all the upcoming summer blockbusters, and let's note that, you know, 80% of them are sequels or remakes, or after the year is over. Look at the top grossing movies of any year. Look at how many sequels and remakes there are among the top grossing movies of the year, indicating to people that there's just absolutely no more creativity left in the world, that there's no originality in movies, that everything's gone to crap. And I'm going to tell you, even among the blockbusters, even among, you know, these huge mainstream big budget Hollywood studio movies, there's still some really good stuff out there. Okay. I just saw Looper and I love that movie. Sci-fi classic, people. This thing is so well put together. It takes the illogic of time travel and tells all of your complaints about it to just kiss off, because that's the story we're telling. All right. You can just go hang, because guess what? We're going to take all of this mess of this time travel situation, the idea of sending people back to be killed in the past because it's more convenient, having people be sent back to be killed by themselves, and then the convoluted stuff that happens when you try and change the past. And it takes all of that and says, yeah, okay, we understand that's stupid. That's not the point. Look at this story. And it's really good. All right, Looper was awesome. All right. The Avengers, Do you remember how much you loved the Avengers? All right, and that is as big budget, mainstream, highly anticipated as it gets. And yes, it's Joss Whedon, and yes, it's comic book nerd culture, but it's mainstream as all hell. And I loved Avengers. There was so much originality within that. And yes, they're working with the formula. And yes, they're working with the big splashy Hollywood effects. Who cares? It entertained me. Beginning to end, nonstop, entertained the crap out of me. I love that movie. So there's good stuff out there. And, it, you know, if you're the kind that goes in for the smaller films, if you go in for the independent stuff, if you go in for the foreign films, whatever it is that you like, there's good stuff out there. The problem is that there's also a lot of crap. Okay? There, without any doubt, there's a ton of garbage out there. So what? There's always been a ton of garbage out there. That's the part that you're not realizing, is that we look back at days past and we look at you know, the heyday of the 70s when they had this film renaissance going on with all these gritty new young directors and how awesome movies were in those days. But let's not forget that the 70s also churned out a ton of garbage. There's always been a ton of garbage, but, you know, 40 years later now, well, we don't remember the garbage so well. All right, we remember the garbage of the 80s because we lived through that. We can make jokes about, you know, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. We can make jokes about horrible knockoff movies and stuff like that we remember from our youth. But the days before that, where we didn't actually live through the crap, we didn't live through the junk, well, we don't remember those because no one's making those jokes anymore. It's not cool to make pop culture references about crappy movies. I almost had to bleep myself. About making, you know, the crappy movies from the 50s. Yeah, okay, we remember the cheesy B-horror and that kind of stuff. We know that there's that style of movie out there. And some of them, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space, are so horrible that they've made it into cultural consciousness even decades later. But even those, when you think about B-horror movies, well, yeah, but those are so bad they're good. They've come to this campy nostalgia point where people can look back at them fondly and talk about how much they enjoy this cheesy sci-fi horror garbage from way back when. But you gotta remember that in its day, it was garbage. It was real horrible, horrible garbage. Bad movies, just like we have bad horror movies today. It's the same thing. And so it's a matter of, yes, there's far more exposure to media nowadays. There's far more stuff going on, far more stuff to choose from, simply because, God, nowadays, anybody with a microphone and a laptop can put out a podcast. Anyone with a video camera can make these cheesy independent movies. Anyone, I mean, there's so much stuff out there, but you just got to pick through it. The good stuff is still there too. Just like, look, how many years, decades did we have to go on hearing about the decline of television? That television was turning to garbage, that you know, all the sitcoms were formulaic and all the dramas were formulaic, and that, you know, there was nothing original out there. These, you know, laugh track, canned sitcom things, that they all did the exact same stuff. There was no originality. It was all cheesy pablum dished out for the masses, et cetera, et cetera. But then we came along with stuff like you're seeing on Showtime and HBO. You're looking at Boardwalk Empire. You're looking at, you know, The Sopranos from 10 years ago. You're looking at, the Game of Thrones. I can't believe I couldn't come up with the name of it. There's so much good TV out there right now, all right, coming from not as much from the mainstream networks, not so much from the big four or big five, however you classify them, but the little networks. I mean, Mad Men out of, Bravo? Good Lord, that thing is going like, it's just good television, and there's lots of good television. In fact, right now, you don't even hear people complaining about, ooh, the television's gone to crap, because there's so much good stuff that's resurged because we have different venues for it, and it's easier to find the good stuff. It's easier to make the good stuff nowadays. It's the same sort of stuff. Music? All right, you know what? If we're going to talk about music turning to crap, apparently, no less an authority than science has come out recently to tell us that no, music really has turned to crap. I'm sorry. That's just the way it goes. But again, they're only talking about top 40. All right? They're looking at the songs that have been hits for the last, you know, 50, 70 years, whatever it is that they're setting their timeline on. And apparently they did a scientific analysis of all these different top 40 hits from decades past. And if you look at the graph, what it shows is that music over the last 50 years has become simpler and louder. It's lost its complexity of music and melody and beat. It's lost its complexity and it's gained in volume. And therefore, we are a simple Cro-Magnon sort of people, apparently. But again, I think that's an oversimplification. That's looking at, yes, top 40 music. Okay, so great. So the people who handle the science behind the music have figured out the formula that works, and they are fine-tuning that formula to its pinnacle. But the entire world isn't made up of top 40 music. I mean, there's so much out there, as we already witnessed from my previous conversation. So, you know, it's not as simple as all that. I think there's tons of great music out there, and I'm constantly finding new stuff that I like, or at least my wife is finding it for me. And some of it is, you know, mainstream top 40 stuff. Some of it is Gangnam Style. Some of it, I mean, yes, there's top 40 garbage in there from various charts, and yet I enjoy listening to it. You know, I've already proclaimed my love for Pink and Justin Timberlake, and I guess, you know, I've got to live with the consequences of that. But there's also other stuff out there, too. And we have so many venues, satellite radio, internet, going through iTunes if you want to buy all your music, which I do. YouTube, there's places where you can sample and experiment and find new music all over the place. And you don't have to be limited to top 40. If there's even, I mean, I don't know. Top 40. I mentioned this on the boards, but I haven't talked about it on the podcast yet. I'm sorry, I'm going far afield here. But I have no top 40 stations on my radio anymore. And not that I need a top 40 station, not that I want to listen to top 40 stuff, but you know, every once in a while, you know, it's mindless, it's easy. And, you know, I can remember when I had my satellite radio and I was listening to that all the time. Most of the time, you know, I'd listen to some oldies stuff. I'd listen to the grunge station. I'd listen to the new alternative station or the new hip hop mix station or whatever. Bluegrass. Oh, I loved the bluegrass station. That was awesome. But every once in a while, I'd get tired and, you know, it just felt like I'd heard everything on these. And so I would get tired and I'd go, let's see what's on top 40. I'd listen to top 40 for a half hour and just, okay, there. That clears my head. Let's move on to something else. And so the other night, I didn't have my iPod on me and I had like a half hour drive ahead of me. And I thought, God, let's just get some music going. And I couldn't find anything on the radio. My FM dial, at this hour of night, I was getting more stations than I usually get. It was that perfect hour of night, just after sunset, when you're getting really good reception from everywhere. It's a good, clear night. And as I flipped through, I swear I had maybe 20-something stations that I could choose from, maybe about 20. And it was 10 of them were Christian stations, so Christian rock, Christian alternative, Christian easy listening, or just straight-up preachers. So 10 Christian stations, religious stations, then maybe something like 7 country stations, and then a couple of oldies, and then a handful of stuff I couldn't identify. Uneasy listening was thrown in there. But yeah, with all of that, no top 40 station anymore. How weird is that? I mean, honestly, two oldies, it's classic rock when I say oldies. So there's easy listening, classic rock, a bunch of country, and Christian rock. And that's the whole dial. I mean, maybe it's just the area I live in. I'm sure it's just the area I live in. But it was just weird. I haven't listened to terrestrial radio in so long that I didn't realize that all of those old classic channels that I used to listen to, no, they've all changed. They've all changed format. They're all something I don't want to listen to anymore. So, I mean, classic rock is really about the best I can get. Because a lot of when they say classic rock, oh, God, that's including the early 90s now in classic rock. Oh, so sad that Pearl Jam is classic rock, which I guess it is. But I just didn't realize I was that old. Which, okay, I've meandered way off course. But the point I'm making is movies are not turning to crap, people. Just stop it. Stop saying that. Seriously. There's good movies out there. There's crap movies out there, but there's good movies out there. And you know there are because you've watched them and you've enjoyed them. Which brings me to the word of the week. We haven't had a word of the week for a while. The word of the week this week, Kiri's. K-E-R-E-S, and this is actually an ancient word. It is a Greek word referring to these demonic spirits that roamed over battlefields, choosing among the dead and dying who would live and who would die, specifically looking for wounded that they could suck the blood and life force from, these vampiric spirits that would find wounded men, drain them of their essences, and then carry their souls off to Hades or Tartarus or whatever they wanted to call it in this particular myth. And they're mentioned in a bunch of different ancient Greek stories and myths, but it's Kyries. All right, the reason that word is fascinating to me is that they seem to be the evil equivalent of the Norse Valkyries, all right? Because the Norse Valkyries, also spirits of death and afterlife, who roam over battlefields, and they choose among the wounded who will live and who will die, and the ones that they choose are taken away to Valhalla to live in glory. All right, so these are the benevolent versions of the Kyries. And the excellent part about all of this is that both of their names, Kyries and Valkyrie, come from the same root. Kyries was Greek, I suppose, or something related to it, for choice or to choose, because that's what they did. Well, Valkyrie comes from Kyrie, which is, you can already hear the similarity of the word, also to choose, choice, from the same root. All right, they're spelled completely differently, and it would be more impressive if you could see the spellings of them. But both of them come from the same concept, but the Valkyries have become this grand, noble, benevolent spirit to take you away to great glory in the afterlife and eternal battle in Valhalla and all of that good stuff. Whereas the Kyries of Greek myth were there to prey off of the dying and then cart their souls off to hell. Ooh, I like that a lot. That was excellent. I was so tickled when I found that. Which then, of course, led into this long Wikipedia rabbit hole again of Irish death spirits, the Battle Crow, which is from Irish myth, and I can't remember the name, or, well, I do, it's B-A-D-B, which I don't know how to pronounce in Gaelic, but it's a goddess or spirit known as the Battle Crow that basically does the same sort of thing, participating in war and battle and flying over, and winds up being also a spirit of death when need be. And then she has sisters, and then went on forever. And I wound up, because I saw the word Kyries in something I was researching, it took me through about an hour and a half worth of various death spirits from all sorts of different cultures and their similarities and differences. And it was fascinating. But you know what we need to round out the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast? We need a badass movie quote of the week. Okay. I'm not going to tell you who it's from just yet. You'll recognize it. You'll recognize it. Quote, I attended Juilliard. I'm a graduate of the Harvard Business School. I travel quite extensively. I lived through the Black Plague, and I had a pretty good time during that. I've seen The Exorcist about 167 times, and it keeps getting funnier every single time I see it, not to mention the fact that you're talking to a dead guy. Now, what do you think? Am I qualified? All right, I can't do the voice. Oh, end quote. I can't do the voice at all, but that's Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. I love that quote. Great statement of his qualification, because he shows up in response. You've seen the movie. I don't even know why I'm explaining Beetlejuice to you. You know where that's from. And anyway, Michael Keaton is just pitch perfect as Beetlejuice in this film. I love Beetlejuice. I love the whole look and sensibility to it, the comic mixed with the horror. I love, my absolute favorite is the Banana Boat song. I love the whole thing. And it was even also, by the way, the movie where I first fell in love with Winona Ryder. Because do you remember? Well, maybe some of you are too young, but those of you who are old enough, do you remember back when you were in love with Winona Ryder? Back before she turned into a klepto and a flake and we all realized that she couldn't really act? Yeah. Oh, she was so cute and winsome back then, wasn't she? Oh, awesome. But R2 is just banging at my door, so it must be time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Send your question or topic to me by email, or don't send it by email. Better yet, send it to me in a private message on our forums. I will add it to our Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And of course, I just did the all Pod-O-Matic episode, and I used up a good 40 of them or something. And in response, you guys sent me a ton of new ones. Oh, this is awesome. I was down to about 200. We're up to about 300 now. You guys are great. All right. I am so thrilled to death with these new ones. This is great. You guys are awesome. Also, I had some criticism of last week's episode because I had a couple of questions where, you know, if a Pod-O-Matic comes up and, hey, have you ever heard of this band? And I haven't. I just go, nope, haven't. And then I move on. And I was told that, dude, what, you don't have Google? Come on. At the very least, go to Google and hit I'm feeling lucky. Give us something. Jeez. All right. You know what? You guys put the effort into these questions, and you clearly work really hard at them for some of these. So I should give you at least that much courtesy. So my new policy, and I'm going to try and remember it here today, is if something comes up and I don't have an immediate answer, if I can't figure out, if I don't know what it is, whatever, all right, I'll Google. We'll see what happens. All right. So, R2 has been sitting patiently with the number 74 showing, so let's look on the chart, and that is from Brasky. Brasky says, what does rugged good looks smell like? Okay, and he's got more to this question, but I'm not going to look at it yet, because he's obviously, this is Brasky's style. He wants an answer first. I'm going to babble a little bit to stall while I try and think of what rugged good looks smells like. I can only imagine that it smells a lot like Sam Elliott's mustache. I was going to say Chuck Norris's beard, but I don't find Chuck Norris that attractive. So, but it's really rugged good looks. Rugged, immediately I think of beards because of the rugged episode of Dexter's Laboratory. But yeah, I'm going to go with Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott's facial hair. That's what rugged good looks smells like. Kyle's response, as we go further into his question, he says, okay. Then what does overweight and desperate smell like? You're looking at him! Number 39. This one is The Serious Paul. And apparently we've got a theme going because Serious Paul says, my dad sometimes stinks. Is that common to all dads? It depends on what you mean or what kind of stink we've got. I think all of us stink at some point or another, with the exceptions of Mila Kunis and my wife, who always smell like lovely, lovely roses. Okay, everybody stinks at some point, obviously. Everyone's got a fart sometime. We've all got our issues. Everyone has a hard day at work, and they come home sweaty. Everyone's got their moments. But stink in general, you mean like old man smell? Oh man, I think that just comes with age. I think there is just that old man smelling like grandma's attic sort of thing. I don't know. Or it also depends because, and I'm not going to name any names, but there's been a couple of old men that I've known, who were actually grandparents or great grandparents by this point. I don't know how old they were. But they have that pee stink because, you know, the bladder is, not quite as solid as it used to be. And if the wife is gone, she's passed away, or they don't have one, or whatever, there's not someone there to take care of them and tell them that they smell. Yeah, there's gonna be a bit of a stink, and they don't know because they've been sitting in it all day. Yeah, I think it is a common trait. Is it common to all dads? Ask my kids. Yeah, I probably stink. I'm gonna make a guess. I don't have them here, but yeah, I'm gonna guess it's common to most dads. Number 75. This is from Brasky again. Brasky says, have I done this one before? Gosh darn it. Sometimes I don't. I don't delete them afterwards, and I catch them later, but sometimes I don't delete them, and then I wonder if I've done them or not. Maybe I just saw it when it came in. I don't know. Anyway, you've just been given the power to teleport at will, and without the accompanying bamf sound and smell of sulfur. What do you do with that, and how do you capitalize on it to make money? Let's see. Well, you know, this is where the movie Jumper had it right. The opening of that movie was spectacular, even with Hayden Christensen in it. He finds out that he can teleport, and therefore he lives the good life. All right, he pops in, takes whatever he wants, pops back out. He shows up at the top of the pyramids as his little vacation spot where he can relax for a while with his lawn chair and a good book. He can go anywhere and do anything. He is amazing in the first 20 minutes of that. Awesome, awesome film. And then the movie turned to utter and complete crap after that. But that's the right way to go. That's how you do it. Unfortunately, the next part of this question says, are you worried about being dissected by the government? Not dissected so much, no. I have enough faith in our government that I don't think I would be dissected for my teleporting powers. However, I am afraid of being captured by the government and kept in a teleporting proof facility where they will then study me and never let me go because I'm too valuable. That would suck. Because even if you can teleport at will, even if you can teleport as well as he did in the movie Jumper, which was awesome in the beginning, when I say awesome, the awesome teleporting, not the awesome movie, even if you can do all that, yeah, I have no doubt that the government would find some way to block teleportation out of their facility, and then I would be stuck. I would hate that. And hopefully, unlike the movie, you know, it wouldn't be something horribly painful to keep you pinned down, but it could happen. So yeah, that would be my big worry. But you know, at least for a while, I'd get caught a few times and it would be just fine because I'd just teleport right out. Who gives a crap? They can catch me all they want. But eventually they'd figure it out, and eventually Sam Jackson would come hunt me down, and I would hate that. I would really hate to be hunted by Sam Jackson. I don't think I would enjoy it in the least. As cool, I mean, it would be nice to meet him, you know, but then after the initial, you know, hey, how you doing? Oh my God, you're Sam Jackson. And then he hits me with the electric whip. I'm done. Yeah, see? No fun. Number 6. Dire Cat. Dire Cat says, if you could be any style of door, what type would you be? Oh, I have several answers. I mean, right off the top of my head, you ask a question like this. I mean, I love revolving doors, but I don't think I'd want to be a revolving door. I don't think I am a revolving door. That doesn't quite seem right. A trap door. You know, I love trap doors. I love that idea. But trap doors, they feel a little, they feel a little rustic. You know what I mean? The kind of thing that your trap door is set in the floor of your barn and leads down to your fruit cellar or the place where you hide the bodies or whatever it is you use your trap door for. Maybe, I don't know. If I had the choice, I'd want to be a secret door. I'd want to be one of those doors that's hidden inside a bookcase or some other, you know, cleverly disguised doorway. But I wouldn't be. I mean, it's asking me, oh, wait, no, it's asking if I could be any style of door. It's not asking what style of door I think is most like myself. So, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with secret door. Oh, thank goodness. Because what door would I be if I was a door? Yeah, I'd just be an ordinary standard front door, a wooden door. I'd probably have a screen on me. Yeah, that would be kind of dull. But if I could choose, secret door all the way, man. Number 71. Serious Paul again? My kiddo is dissecting a frog. How cool is that? It's a Christmas present. Well, that's incredibly cool, Paul. I am amazed that your kid got a dissectable frog for... Wait a minute. Did your kid get a frog dissecting kit? Or did they just get a frog and they've chosen to dissect it. Your kid is sick, Paul. Sick. Number 32. Hey, Paul again? Paul can still dominate. How is it that roller skating isn't a bigger factor in more role-playing games? because it's roller skating? As much fun as we all know roller skating is, and even more so roller blading, because you have all the advantages of roller skating while being uber cool at the same time, most of the games we play have better modes of transportation, or have not yet been smart enough to figure it out. I mean, in D&D, wouldn't it feel a little weird to have a pair of roller skates on? I mean, wouldn't it just seem a little odd, especially since, you know, without mass production, it would have to be the handcrafted jobs. It would be roller skates of dwarven make. Would that be cool? Well, probably gnomes, the tinkerers, would put together those roller skates, right? But you just don't have the culture for it, and it's not a, oh, God, that would feel so wrong. And then on the other hand, if you go with your futuristic games and you put roller skates in them, have you seen movies where roller skating or roller blading figures big in the future? Yeah, it looks gimmicky, doesn't it? Just looks weird, like they're trying way too hard. I think, while the national headquarters of the Roller Skating Society of America, which is probably not its actual name, I don't remember the exact acronym, the headquarters for the National Roller Skating Association is right here in Nebraska, in Lincoln, Nebraska, by the way. And I have a great appreciation for the sport of roller skating and blading. I think you're trying too hard. Number 12. Serious Paul. Serious Paul says, who was your favorite G.I. Joe? My favorite G.I. Joe was the original 12-inch tall Ken doll with a beard G.I. Joe that I had when I was a little kid. I also had, actually, I think they were 10 inches. But anyway, I had the 10-inch G.I. Joe because all of my friends had that one. And Joey had the one with the kung fu grip. I hated him for that. And then I also had the 10-inch tall Steve Austin, $6 million man, played by Lee Majors. I had that action figure, which had the removable flesh wrist with the cybernetics underneath. That was pretty cool. That would be my favorite G.I. Joe, was the big one with the original equipment. Of the little ones, of the one, you know, if you're actually talking which one is my favorite character from the movie, from the cartoon, from the toys, and I'm sure that's what your question actually meant. Scarlet, hot redhead. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, Scarlet. Yeah, she was the one. Number 20, Brasky. Brasky says, have you ever made fun of someone who had recently had a loved one die? No, right? Yeah, that would be heartless, right? Like, you'd never laugh and make fun of a six-year-old boy whose grandfather had just died, right? God, no, that would be horrifying. I can't even imagine what would prompt you to ask such a question, because I remember that. Okay, when I was 7 years old, it was seven. So actually, the little boy was not six. He was four going on five. Maybe he was five already. When I was 7 years old, my grandfather died, and he, in fact, died in our house. They lived over 1,000 miles away, but they had come up to visit. They had spent the summer with us for a couple weeks. We had all gone on this big vacation by the lake, and then we came back to our house, and they were getting ready to fly out any day now, and he had a heart attack, and he passed away in our house. And we woke up in the middle of the night, and it was very confusing, and we didn't know what was going on. The paramedics were there, and we were getting the idea that he had died, but I didn't even know for sure that night that's what was going on. Okay. It wasn't until the next day that I put together what all of it was. Although that's not a defense. Look, I was 7 years old. That's my defense. But my brother, who was four-ish at the time, was crying. And I wasn't. And so at that point, I turned to him and I said, "What are you crying?" And apparently, I don't remember the incident. He's merely related this to me many times over the years because it traumatized him so much. I don't remember any of this at all. So I don't remember the timing on it. I don't remember when it came up. But apparently, I said, "What are you crying?" And I said it with such a tone that implied that only a complete pansy would be crying. "God, what, your grandfather died? What's wrong with you?" Okay, that's the implication, and that's the way he took it. And I don't remember the incident, so clearly I may well have said it like that. I don't know. To my defense, dude, you were being a total pansy about it, really. Number 48. Hey, Zimney Pot. Hi, Zim. Zim says, "How do you vent your anger?" That is a great question. I beat my kids. I'm kidding. I don't beat my kids. That was a joke. In fact, it wasn't even a funny joke. I take it back. I should go back and edit that out, but I won't because I'm lazy. But that was offensive, and I never should have done it. No, I vent my anger. I don't know. Usually I either, sometimes I yell. Sometimes I just get really grumpy until someone goes, "God, what's up your butt? Jeez." And then I go, "Oh, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm being grumpy. I understand now." And then I start dealing with what it is that's bothering me. But for the most part, I don't stay angry long. So it's not really a huge issue that I need to go vent. Look, I get angry. I get upset. I will then take immediate action, usually, or, well, not immediate, but, I will take some sort of action to deal with it or figure out that, okay, if it's not appropriate for me to go to this person, if it's not appropriate for me to deal with them, okay, what do I do for myself to deal with it? And I work it out, and I'm just not the kind of guy that can stay angry for long. I don't hold a grudge for long. I can't do that. It's not in my nature. So that's not a real complete answer for you, Zim, and I know that, but it's all I got. Number 50. Zimney Pot again. Zim says, "What is beauty?" Well, it's the eyes of a beholder. No. I don't. Okay. This is where we go to Google. Because my only answer, really, beauty is something that is aesthetically pleasing as judged by whoever happens to be looking. So really, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Is true. But let's try on Google. Hold on. All right. What is beauty? Go. Oh, look at this. It pops up dictionary definitions for me. According to Google, beauty is a combination of qualities such as shape, color, or form that pleases the aesthetic senses, especially the sight. Okay, or alternately, a combination of qualities that pleases the intellect or moral sense. All right, something that is aesthetically pleasing. That's, you know what? I was pretty much right on. But hold on. As long as we get Google open, let's switch over to an image search. Oh, hey, look at that. Look at that. Third picture up on a Google image search for beauty, Mila Kunis. What have I been telling you guys all these months? Mila Kunis. Although, hey, the second one, hold on, I'm going to click through to, it is a Daily Mail article, Daily Mail newspaper from the UK. I've seen this one before. I recognize the picture. It is the most beautiful girl in England, or the most beautiful girl in the United Kingdom. Britain's most beautiful face. There it is. And her name is Florence Colgate. And Florence Colgate is a girl, 18 years old, 19 years old, who works in a chip shop in London and was selected as the most beautiful girl in England. And holy crap, go do a Google image search for Florence Colgate. And man, she really is. Just this, I mean, she is stunning. It is this very Nordic blonde type, very Swedish looking, with these brilliant blue eyes. Just gorgeous and just amazing. And she, again, she just, you know, she's just a girl who's a, she's a student, works in a chip shop in London. She's not anything special, but from all the pictures that they had available, her face had the most perfect symmetry or whatever it was that they were using to judge by, and she was picked as the most beautiful girl in England. And, yeah, holy crap. She deserves it. I'm sure she's still not working in the chip shop now. I'm sure her modeling contract or whatever her this turned into for her has worked out well. But just a fascinating article on how they picked her. And anyway, interesting. That's beauty. There you go, Zim. All right, you know what? I was doubtful about this Google idea. But you guys have convinced me. This one it worked out for. It got me Mila Kunis and Florence Colgate all in a single Podomatic entry. So I'm happy. Hold on. I'm trying to click back to where all my programs are. There we go. All right. Oh, still recording. That's good. Number 18. This one comes from Sirius Paul again. Do you support the genetic restructuring of eggs? By which, of course, I mean chicken eggs. Well, I suppose if you want to make them taste better, I guess, but I don't know how you could improve on the flavor that is already egg, the incredible edible egg. I love eggs, but I love most things, as you guys have noticed. Yeah, you know what? When it comes to genetic engineering of crops, of livestock, of you know, stuff for medicine, stuff. I have no problem with genetic engineering. I really don't. Yes, obviously, we need to be careful, maybe even more careful than we have been. I don't know all the facts. I'm just speaking off the top of my head. Obviously, we have to be very, very careful because it's genetic engineering and you don't want to introduce something that that may cause problems down the line. Obviously. Okay, but as a tool, I don't have a problem with genetic engineering. I don't have a problem with genetically restructuring eggs. I don't think it has anything to do with genetic restructuring, but you know that most of the vaccines that we get nowadays, our flu shot that we get every year, are grown inside of chicken eggs. I mean, that's how they make them. I don't think they're genetically restructuring the eggs. I think they're injecting, or I don't know what they do with them. I'm not a vaccine expert, but I do know that that's why every time you go get the flu shot, they make you check the box that says that you're not allergic to eggs. Because if you are, you're going to break out when you take the vaccine. You're going to react. I have no problem. I love eggs as they are, but I also wouldn't have any problem if they also decided to come out with nacho-flavored eggs or whatever it is they're going to do with their genetics. Because I assume that if you're going to genetically restructure eggs and chickens, it's going to be so that, they produce leaner, tastier meat faster as they grow. That would be the first reason to genetically engineer your chickens. And then the second is that they can lay nacho-flavored eggs. If I get eggs in nacho cheese flavor, oh, man, wouldn't that be awesome? Or what if they already just included salt and pepper flavor so I didn't have to bother with adding my own salt and pepper to my scrambled eggs? See? It's French onion eggs. I'm all for this. I really am. Number 86 from Sirius Paul again. What was your favorite episode of Silver Spoons? The one where he rides the big train through the living room? No, I'm kidding. That was every episode. I'm struggling here because I watched Silver Spoons. I know I did. I remember Silver Spoons, but I don't remember anything about it. I remember Rick Schroeder, Ricky, back then. I remember Carlton from Fresh Prince was in it. And I remember what the dad looked like, but I can't remember who played him. But I don't remember a single episode. I do not remember anything that ever happened on that show. So therefore, let's go to Google. And there we go. What is your favorite episode of Silver Spoons? Go. All right, I didn't hit the I'm feeling lucky button. I'm just looking at the list. All right, the first one's Wikipedia. I don't care about a Wikipedia of Silver Spoons in general. Ooh, but the second link mentions episode descriptions. Okay. And click season 1, episode 22. Apparently, my favorite episode of Silver Spoons was the X Team. That was the title of the episode, and very timely and very funny. Kate, was she the girlfriend, the new mom? I don't remember. Anyway, Kate. Oh my God! All right, but Kate catches Ricky, JT, and Freddie watching an X-rated movie while Edward is sleeping. Yeah, it was pretty traumatic, wasn't it? You guys remember that one? Oh, that one was my favorite. Funny. But all right, the reason I gasped earlier is Kate from Silver Spoons was Erin Gray? How do I not remember that that was Erin Gray? How? I mean, because you got to be my age. But Buck Rogers in the 25th century, Erin Gray was the girl from, I don't even remember her character's name in the show. I just remember she was Erin Gray. And she was, back then, watching Buck Rogers, we loved Buck Rogers. We never missed an episode. And Erin Gray was the hottest thing walking. Oh, God, I loved Erin Gray back then. She was amazing. Absolutely amazing. She's like, I don't know, the way people fawn over what's her name as Starbuck from the new Battlestar Galactica, except, of course, that she, you know, didn't have all the female empowerment that would have come from, you know, being in a TV show after 1987. Because this was back in the 80s. All right, I'm trailing off here. I'm sorry, I'm not being coherent. Buck Rogers was early 80s, I think, very early 80s. And, yeah, female empowerment was not a big thing. Equality among the sexes was not there. I mean, it was all about Buck what was the robot's name? Twiggy? Tweety? Twiggy? Tweety? I don't remember. Beady, 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 beady. That's all I know. All right, moving on. Number 45. This one is from Zimney Pot again. And Zim says, what is the model of your mobile phone? Oh, you're going to love this. My mobile phone from Verizon is, oh, Jesus, it's not even printed on here. It is, I believe, a Motorola. Let me see if I've got it here underneath the battery. Well, okay, here's the actual model number. It's CDM8975PTT. It is a Motorola flip phone. Zim, a flip phone. Are you hearing me? All right. The thing is, the cheapest and sturdiest flip phone that I could buy at the time that I bought it. And it has held up fairly well. It has a front screen as well as an interior screen, but the front screen is cracked. The plastic over it is completely shattered. It still works just fine. But I actually have a piece of packing tape across the entire front of my phone in order to keep moisture from getting in where the screen is cracked, and also to keep it from cracking further. So the cracked portions of the screen are all attached to the packing tape, and so that way they don't, you know, move, wiggle, flap up and down, and break further. That is my mobile phone. I don't have a smartphone. I don't have anything cool. For work, I've got a Droid 2 that I use at work, and pretty soon I'll be trading that in for something new because, you know, it's work, and they'll pay for, you know, the new phone every 2-3 years. I've had this one for a while. I've probably had this phone for about 4 years at work. So I've got a Droid 2. It's a smartphone, but I don't have a whole ton of apps on it. I use it for my email for work. I use it for phone calls, browsing the internet when I need to for the job when I'm out in the field. But it's not. I use it for GPS map instructions when I'm driving. That's about it. But no, my personal phone, yeah, like I say, the cheapest Motorola flip phone that I could pick up, probably 4, 5, 6 years ago. It's been a while. This one actually has lasted me a while. I'm actually kind of happy with. No, not 4 or 5 years. The contract's been up for a while, probably close to 3 years. That's probably more accurate. Not that the time frame matters. All that matters is it's a crappy phone.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. This week's theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music was Beck playing Two Turntables and a Microphone. I love that song. It's out on iTunes. You need to go buy it because I wouldn't put it in my podcast if I didn't love it. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, you could head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review, or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Hey, by the way, if you're going to stop by my site, you should click on the games page and check out a whole bunch of games designed by me and my brother that we give away for free all the time. All right? If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, but you know that's not going to work. To be totally honest, the best way to talk to me, come sign up for my forums, nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll be buds, we'll have fun. One more. 99. This one is from Stan. And Stan says, science fiction, hard or soft? Oh, dude, hard science fiction. Not that I mind soft science fiction. It doesn't bother me in the least. All right, I run the full gamut from pure fantasy, soft science fiction, medium, etc. The whole thing, I like the entire spectrum. As long as it's a good story, it doesn't matter so much what's behind it. But the stories that I love the best tend to be hard science fiction. I like science fiction stories that were, and for those of you who aren't aware, hard science fiction means it's working to get the science right, at least plausible or consistent, some level of verisimilitude that makes it believable, makes it realistic in the science. And of course, it's science fiction, so it's not completely realistic, obviously, but they work hard to try and make it all consistent, plausible, workable with what we know of the world. Whereas soft just kind of blows a lot of that off and, you know, hey, look, we've got hover bikes and teleportation and, you know, Star Trek. Star Trek is very much soft science fiction. Some people argue that it's okay, it's medium soft. You can put classifications on it. But Star Trek is really soft science fiction. All right, they put in transporters because it would have been too expensive to work out shuttle landings for every episode. All right, so it's too expensive to present that visually. So therefore, we'll just go with this cheap transporter effect, and we'll do transporters. All right, so the transporters, the holodecks, the replicators, everything else that went into Star Trek, the warp drives, the tractor beams, the gravity simulators. Good God, the fact that they have artificial gravity on their frickin' ships, that effortless artificial gravity. All right. Again, it was all done for budget constraints because, you know, you got to kind of put this stuff together and make it work because we're going to have to be able to film it with what the studio will give us. But the implications of those things, if you took a hard science fiction view of it and said, okay, if these things actually exist, A, how do they work? And then B, what are the consequences of having those? What would people actually do with them if we had that sort of technology? Yeah, Star Trek didn't look at that because Star Trek didn't care. Star Trek was about the human condition. Star Trek was about examining modern humanity, examining the current human condition through the lens of this science fiction framework. And it did really, really well at that. And I love Star Trek for everything that it's done. And it's had its ups and downs and its failings. But in general, that's the gist of Star Trek. And I think it worked really well at this. And soft doesn't bother me. All right. Star Wars, by the way, not even soft science fiction. Star Wars is just science fantasy. It's a pure sword and sorcery tale dressed up with science fiction trappings to make it look cool. But hard science fiction stories just tickle me to no end. And when I write science fiction myself, science fiction short stories that I have written, science fiction novels that I have started and never finished and even am currently working on. Hard science fiction is the way I go, or at least as hard as I can get it, because there's a level of research and technical detail that okay, I'm not gonna go into that level. I don't want to have to go get a degree in engineering to be able to write correctly about these things, but I do my best. All right, and I love hard science fiction. I think it's an excellent question, but yeah, anything's good. But hard science fiction would be my preference if I had a choice.